Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe Crazy Rider. What are you munching on today, Joe?
Well, pie, of course.
Oh, yeah, pie. Leftover from Easter?
No, fresh.
Oh. Mm. What kind?
That's good stuff.
We're kind of recording a show here.
Oh, let me start again. Oh, we're live, bud.
We're live, partner.
No, just hot.
Oh, you got a hot mic.
A hot pie too.
What kind?
I figure, since we're recording, days after our extravaganza with Mr. Moore and that fuzzy, I don't think Wolfie's an actual hand puppet. I think it's just Dan never washes his hands and it just took life of its own.
That could very well be.
However, we don't really got a lot to talk about.
Oh, there's always more to talk about, Joe. Remember in the last episode when Marvel said they had a big announcement coming?
Yeah.
Well, they made the announcement.
And?
The Fantastic Four are coming back in August.
Ooh.
Written by Dan Slott and drawn by Sarah Pichelli, who most people know from her run on Ultimate Spider-Man. And Dan Slott said that he has been working on this for quite a long time. I'm actually surprised that it was Dan Slott who got the nod to do the Fantastic Four. I thought they'd either bring in a ringer from the outside or... because Chip Zdarsky's doing the Marvel 2-in-1 run, that he was gearing up for it. But now they're giving it to Dan Slott, who will be doing two books, and he hasn't done two books in a long time. On Spider-Man, he was just doing one. So, what are you looking for when the Fantastic Four comes back?
I want to be entertained. The big thing. And usually... I want a classic run. I don't even count the Lee Kirby as classic. I mean, they introduced a lot of things, but if you take it as a whole, there are bright spots and there were not so bright spots. Certainly, the coming of the Silver Surfer is epic. The first 10 issues are beautiful. John Byrne's run until he kind of lost interest at the end was excellent. Matt Faction's run was good. I enjoyed what Hickman did. Like I've even enjoyed some of the Otterball things. I talked about last week, I finished Secret Wars 2 Omnibus, and they had that big run where Thing was all mutated, and I think Sharon was Ms. Marvel, a female Thing, and they kind of found the Beyonder, and they did cosmic things and stuff like that. And that's something, too, with the FF. I mean, how much more cosmic can you get than what they pulled off in the last Secret Wars? Everything destroyed, everything came back. Are we going to have them fighting the Fatal Four? Are they going to be doing cosmic things? Are they just going to do everyday things? Sometimes the everyday thing of Fantastic Four can be interesting as well. I love the John Byrne run where – Reed is getting ready to put away the Christmas tree and he taps a button and it just poof, goes into a nice little pole. And Sue is utterly incensed with him and invisible. And Mr. Fantastic's looking around like he has no idea where she is because she's invisible. What's wrong? How could you do something so practical? And I'd like to see the return of that funky costume. No, not really. That's the things I don't want to see. I mean, granted, you got to realize Sue is probably one of the top 10 babes in the Marvel Universe. I'm a little torn, because they are it's basically they're a family. And the problem is I've seen other families, especially the what do they call it in Astro City? The first ones?
Yes, the first family.
That is actually kind of what I'd like to see the Fantastic Four be. I mean, it's like, how long are you going to keep, Franklin Little or Valerie Little. Matter of fact, I would, if I were to bring them back now, I'd make them teens. You know, they've been gone. We don't know how long they've been gone. Let them be teenagers. They don't have to be kids anymore. You know, are you going to deal with Franklin's? I mean, he's going to be a what? How did they put it? You know, Galactus has had many heralds. Only one person's ever had Galactus as a herald.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how they do it. Again, will there be a Galactus story? It'd be interesting to see what they do, considering what he's been doing in the Ultimates. Will Dr. Doom figure into it, especially now that Doom is trying to be a good guy? I don't really want to see that erased.
I agree.
I think that could be interesting.
That could be really cool with Reed coming back and all the changes. You're forgetting one of my favorite runs.
Which is?
Mark Waid and Mike Waringo.
Oh, and you know what? I've got that 9-cent issue sitting like feet from me. Because I'm digging through stuff, you know, trying to find what I'm missing in different collections. And I ran across that when they sold that one issue for 9 cents just to try to get people going.
Well, what it was, DC was doing 10-cent comics.
Yeah, I remember.
You know, they did the Superman 10-cent, the Batman 10-cent. So Marvel at that point was, you know, trying to poke their finger in DC's eyes as much as they could. So it's, nope, ours is cheaper. It's 9 cents. And they sold 500,000 of those.
Yeah, they're not the biggest collector item around, you know. So
they did it because they were really thinking that that run would kind of kickstart the Fantastic Four. And it was a great run. But one of the problems with the Fantastic Four was, no matter what they did, it never, from pretty much the 90s on, it stayed a midline book. It's like, oh, okay, we'll put JMS on it. Midline book. We'll put Mark Miller and we'll put the team from the Ultimates on it. Still a midline book. We'll put Hickman on it and have him build up to, you know, his run on the Avengers and still a midline book. And I think one of the problems is that, you know, you talked about that Lee Kirby run. That Lee Kirby run was the foundation of the Marvel Universe. The Marvel Universe was pretty much built there.
Oh, yeah.
And even into the mid-70s, Fantastic Four was their top-selling book. It wasn't until, from what I've read, it wasn't until the late 60s that Spider-Man started outselling it. And even up until, I would say, I started reading in 76. That was when the Fantastic Four kind of faltered a bit. But, you know, it, Thor, Spider-Man, and Conan were Marvel's top-selling books, month in, month out. And I think a lot of the problem with the Fantastic Four is it kind of became mundane. When you read the Fantastic Four with Kirby, every issue was like, even a bad issue was just bursting with ideas. And then when you got into the 70s, you had Roy Thomas, who pretty much said, I have to keep this going. And he threw out tons of new concepts. He kind of built the Marvel multiverse in there with bringing in the Femizon world and bringing in the Shaper of Worlds. And all of these things. And
well, would that be something, too? Would you want to bring that as a book? You know, have the Fantastic Four exploring the multiverse? Would that be entertaining enough?
Well, one of the things Byrne did when he came in, he brought it way down. Because the thing to remember is Byrne, his favorite era of the Fantastic Four was the first 20 or so issues. He even said in interviews that once it got to around issue 40, he didn't like it as much. Whereas me, you know, those early issues are kind of hit and miss, but by the time they got to introducing the Inhumans, for me, that's when it was hitting on all cylinders. So it depends on what style of the Fantastic Four you want, but I think with them being, you know, at the end of Secret Wars, they are creating new universes. And I'm
creating
sorry.
Or restoring.
Creating. because I recently reread that stuff, and it's Franklin would think up a universe, and Reed would take a piece of the Molecule Man and use that to create a new universe. And I think with, especially with Hickman's run, with everything so big, you're going to have to bring it back down to, you're going to have to bring it back down. You know, bring it down to, what was it? I think in Burns' first issue, didn't they fight Diablo, who's, you know, kind of a lame villain. But I think you're going to need to bring it back down because it's so big that it becomes, you know, like Superman throwing planets around. When the power becomes so big, eventually you become numb to it.
So I always figured of the two heroes in the multiverses of DC and Marvel that I'd always want to see to try to save me. I always figured Superman was one. I always thought Mr. Fantastic was the other. Because no matter what happened, he would figure out a way to save you. And, you know, he is, I don't even know where they rank them anymore. Is he the smartest person in the Marvel Universe? Second smartest? Third? Whatever?
I don't remember. I know that, what is it? They used to say that Amadeus Cho was the third smartest person in the Marvel Universe. I think it's silly when they start ranking them like that.
Yeah, and it's like, how do you rate that? But you got to admit, Mr. Fantastic is definitely up there. I mean, he's probably as big a patent holder as Tony Stark, Hank Pym, or Henry. I mean, he's one of the big scientific cheeses in the Marvel Universe that you go to ask for help. And I could see him, you know, while you're busy talking with him, that his limbs are out stretching somewhere. He's doing something else. You know, he could be busy talking with Sue while he's busy doing something. That would be something I'd see characterized. No matter what happens, he's always doing something. He may be talking to you about, yeah, well, you know, we need to do this, that, and the other, but he's busy thinking on something else. I'd like to see stories too, because I mean, how many times has the government come in and taken all of Mr. Fantastic's patents? I'd like to see a story and get Bob Invert, or what's his name? Hey, Rob, the lawyer guy that writes The Law Is an Ass.
Oh, Ingersoll, Bob Ingersoll.
Get him
who
in.
Now does dad jokes on Facebook.
Oh, thank God, we need more
every
dad jokes
morning.
Glorious. 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 But,
oh, wow.
You know, so I would like to see, you know, they've been working on this for a year to get these patents back because, you know, or maybe it's just a thing, you know what? The United States government's got all these things. We don't know what to do with them because we don't have anybody that understands them. You know, there are all these little loose ends around that they could figure out something to do with. I mean, it should be when they launch that Fantastic Four signal, that's an inspiration. Almost as much as like the bat signal or the seeing Superman fly by or seeing that Spider-Mobile, you know, chug along the alleyways.
Wait.
Yeah, I went a little bit too far in that analogy. Hey, they made a Hot Wheel of it. I got one sitting behind me.
They made a Mego car of it that I had in the 70s.
Oh, I remember that. But we're way off track. So, okay. I talked a little bit about how I would characterize Mr. Fantastic. How would you characterize him?
In the past, I liked him as kind of the absent-minded professor, where he's always working on stuff in his head, and every so often Sue kind of gives him a, not a physical, but a emotional slap upside the head, and he goes, oh gosh, I'm so sorry, I was thinking about... He should be somebody who's always thinking about other stuff until somebody distracts him. But you've got to rebuild the characterization. In the 70s, the Thing was the most popular superhero who didn't have his own book. He was as popular as Spider-Man. And then Wolverine came along. And he became the gruff, you know, the gruff guy with the bad attitude. But the Thing was the original gruff guy with the bad attitude. You need to kind of figure out a way to make him interesting. because he's just kind of been floating around for a long time. And you really can't do
Wait,
the...
Who are you talking about?
I'm talking about the Thing.
Oh, okay, because you were talking about Fantastic Four, or Mr. Fantastic.
Yep.
You also got to remember, those two are best friends.
Yes.
They should always be best friends. And it's, you know, granted, one is super smart, and the other one's just kind of burly, but they should always be best friends no matter what. And that's, I think we're going to get to it eventually, but, you know, Fantastic Four is a family, and there should be family dynamics behind almost anything
right.
they do. Again, I think Mr. Fantastic should love his family beyond anything else, especially Sue, and of yep. course his kids as well. And, you know, the one thing that would get him, I think the most ferocious I've ever seen him, again, another run that I loved, was that when he lost his powers and then he regained them right at issue 200. And the fight between him and Doom was just amazing. Because you got to also remember, yeah, he stretches, but he can fight if he needs to. You know, I don't know if they're going to, you know, save a World War II soldier, but I'm pretty sure when the chips are down, Mr. Fantastic isn't a guy you want to be up against.
Yeah, let's hope they don't go into, well, you know, Reed and Ben were World War II vets, because the Marvel timeline, the Fantastic Four launched into space 15 years ago.
Yep.
So no matter when it is.
Space shuttle. It was launched in Rocket X from SpaceX.
Yes. But they launched into space 15 years ago.
And they were fighting? No, it wasn't communist back then.
Well, I think much like with the Punisher, eventually they're going to have to start saying, well, he fought in the Gulf War.
Yeah.
You could say Reed and Ben fought in the first Gulf War, even though that's getting near 30 years old.
Just ignore it.
But there needs to be a big dynamic between them where Reed is the, you know, kind of the absent-minded professor. Ben needs to have a reason to be angry instead of being a cuddly teddy bear.
I kind of liked him when he was mellowed out because he's a millionaire. Although, you know, I think he lost all that during Civil War.
I don't think they ever did anything with it.
No, he lost his money because when he became an expatriate, they met him at the thing and said, you have to give up all your money. You're not leaving with it.
Oh, okay.
It was kind of a shitty thing to do, but he left anyways. But he came back. Again, there are all these things up in the air that, you know, if they're as smart and as rich as they could, I'd like to see, you know, I don't know what Daredevil, if Matt Murdock is a practicing lawyer even. I mean, that's how far out I am on reading some of this. But it'd be nice if he come back and goes, oh, you know this thing we've been working on? Well, we just won. Ben, you got your money back. We got all your patents back. Because, I mean, that was always the foundation of the Fantastic Four, is that they had a some type of, I don't know if it was a trust or a nonprofit corporation. I mean, they did a thing in Mark Waid's thing where Johnny was running with it, trying to make money to keep things going, that funded Reed's experiments and allowed them to do whatever work they were doing outside of superheroing.
And in the 70s, once Jack left, Stan had the Baxter Building owner was always trying to evict them, until eventually yeah. Roy Thomas got tired of that plot line. So he had the building owner show up, and Reed said, how much for the building?
I thought that was Byrne.
It might have been Byrne.
He wrote a thing where he just, you know, Reed's just kind of tired of this
stuff.
Yeah,
here's a check.
But when the guy went away, ching, 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 ching.
But it was one of those where Stan introduced it and everybody stuck with it for the longest time. Kind of like the whole Spider-Man being wanted by the cops. Stan introduced that to the point where when Marv Wolfman got rid of it, it was like, oh, wow, now what are they going to do? But I
how
think
would
you're
you,
going
you
to
you
work, establish these characters.
Okay, well, we got Thing. We got Mr. Fantastic. How would you do that with Sue?
Sue has always been troublesome. Because in the 60s, she was the very typical Stan Lee 50s woman. But anytime somebody tries to update her, they make her into Angry Sue Richards. She shouldn't be angry. She should be kind of and maybe this is stereotypical, but kind of the den mother.
Yeah, too typical.
She's not an idiot, but she should be the one who's trying to keep things going. She's the one who keeps Johnny and Ben from fighting all the time.
What she's done.
Reed fed.
I mean, she ran the Fantastic Four when they thought Reed was dead. She is a powerhouse in her own. Even Dr. Doom admits she's probably the one, the only one, that could probably take him down. We've seen bits of her power. Yeah. And you remember how she took down Taskmaster during Civil War? He likes, oh no, and he's just out. Matter of fact, I'd like to see that. We want Doom as a hero, but how would he? You know, I could see her reaching into his armor and just exploding it from outside. So she's a strong modern woman. You need someone almost like Claremont, the way he wrote women.
Yeah.
To write her strong. I don't buy her as a den mother. I don't buy her as a nursemaid. I don't buy her as a second fiddle. She may not be this. Again, you got a problem because you got Reed is so super smart compared to the other three, but you're right. She's got to be the glue somehow that keeps everything going. And even during Hickman's run, when he was off doing his thing with I don't know what they call them, Council of Reeds, or when they got
that
anti-Council of Reeds together. I got to reread that run eventually. You know, she said, well, we're not just going to sit here and wait. We're doing stuff.
And
plus, she's girlfriends with everybody in the female Marvel Universe, you know?
She's friends with everybody in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
She should be, and by Den Mother, well, maybe I said it wrong, she's the adult in the room.
A little bit closer with, the Submariner than maybe... they had ought to have been. Of course, that was...
We've been through that too many times.
No, I'm just saying, friends, they were friends with benefits while Reed wasn't around. You know, they've actually alluded to that a couple times because they were like, the girls' night out, and they're like, Sue, I can't believe you did that! Said, well, yeah, then again, She-Hulk did Juggernaut, whatever, it's just, it's there, it's not something you talk about, but there should always be a tension between the two. Reed should always look warily on them. But, I mean, granted, being that he's been – I don't even know where Namor is hiding now. You know, I mean, he's kind of been a righteous asshole in the Marvel Universe, especially during the whole Civil War. I mean, I'm saying righteous because he was right. But, he's also on par with Black Panther, Doctor Doom. I don't even know who's running the Inhumans anymore. Again, these
they're going to die. Didn't you see that?
I don't pay attention to a lot of that stuff.
There's a new miniseries coming out this summer called The Death of the Inhumans.
Yeah. That's
so it's almost like, oh, well, you
tried. We got the X-Men back. We don't need these Inhuman type guys. So that leads us back.
Yeah, we tried with the Inhumans. No one cares. Let's kill them. See if that makes people give it
a shit. That leads us back to Johnny Storm, the last guy of the four. And I got to say, I've been liking this is a little bit ahead of me, but I've been liking the way he's been characterized in Peter Parker's Spider-Man.
Yes.
He's not a kid. He's not an idiot. He's not a hothead. He should be probably one of the world's most eligible bachelors. And, being with the women that he's been with and been crushed by, he might not even care to, have another love. I mean, should we list them? Crystal, was it a Skrull, Alice? Alicia?
Alicia, who ended up being a Skrull. Frankie Ray.
But he thought it was her to begin with. So even when he sees her, that's got to be weird for him.
Yeah.
Frankie Ray again.
Medusa.
Oh, I forgot about her. Again with the red hair. No wonder you like brunettes now. So, yeah.
I think people forget that he's the same age as Spider-Man.
Yeah, and I do like them palling around in Peter Parker. I'd like to see him, it depends on where they start with, but I could see him still, while you guys were disappeared, I was still working this Fantastic Four Foundation. Yeah, I made us X amount of money. Matter of fact, that could be like a big opener. We don't have any money because we've been off doing this. Oh, I got that covered. Don't worry.
I would like to see them return to some of the earlier stuff. Yeah, he was a guy who loved cars and mechanical stuff. And So have him be involved in that. Have him be somebody. Now, if I were writing it, which, you know, that doesn't mean this is how it should be done, but if I were writing it, you know, he's about Spider-Man's age, so early 30s. He should be kind of doing the hell am I doing with my life? You know, I've just kind of been bopping around. I've been, you know, here, there, everywhere. My sister's married and has two kids. You know, all my friends who were around my age have settled down. He should be kind of the guy who, when he goes to the club, people go, aren't you a little old to be hanging out here? And deal with that characterization of, I need to figure out what I'm going to be when I grow up.
I'd like to see him more as like a reluctant celebrity.
That'd be good too.
Everywhere he goes, yeah, he's recognized. People know him. They want his autographs. They may not like him. Maybe he doesn't have the respect he deserves in the superhero community. You know, although, you know, it's kind of like, hey, you know, I stopped Galactus. I found that damn ultimate nullifier. You know, I did all this great stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What have you done for me lately? Almost like they did when they were playing Hercules. You know, like he was kind of the Bobo of the Marvel superhero universe. Even though you'd think, dude, this is the Hercules. Just go read his legends. He's not a Bobo. Although he may have been acting like it. What villains would you like to see come back? Touched upon a few.
First, I'd like to see them do new stuff. I know everybody, and Dan Slott talks about it. When you come onto a book, you want to do all the classic villains. But I'd like to see some new villains, some new characters. First off, a new Frightful Four that's not a bunch of losers. And let's face it, the Wizard's a loser. Pastepot Pete is a loser. Sandman, he's okay.
I like him better when he was reformed.
I agree.
Kind of, he was more interesting, you know.
But kind of, you know, Mark Waid had them be explorers. Byrne had them be superheroes. I would mix the two. You know, because if you go back to the Lee Kirby Fantastic Four, it was kind of a soap opera when all sorts of crazy, weird cosmic crap comes down. I think they should be at the heart of the Marvel cosmic world, too.
Well, maybe the
because
Earth
they've
representative.
Been there.
Yeah, I mean, everybody knows them, or fears them, or hates them. I'd like to see, too, I mean, there's always mysteries in the Marvel Universe. You know, like, whatever happened to this? Whatever happened to that? They used to, you know, like the Shogun Warriors, when that wrapped up in Fantastic Four. Howling Commandos is a recent one, just kind of ended. You know, because it nobody bought it, so they dropped it. What happened to all those characters? You got dumb Dugan as a self-perpetuating clone. I'm sure they'll come back and they'll... I mean, was the Fantastic Four around during Original Sin? Wouldn't they be curious what Nick Fury... Does anybody know Nick Fury's... The original is up on the moon?
I don't think so.
You know? I wouldn't... Yeah, this would be the thing, like, maybe Mr. Fantastic might think, you know, whatever happened to all that stuff in the blue area? You know, maybe we should launch... Go up there... You know, again, this is more geek stuff. And, you know, you got to figure out a decent story. Why, you know, but you could incorporate things like that. I could see not only is Mr. the Fantastic Four, you know, the rep to the cosmic universe, but also kind of the they're not S.H.I.E.L.D., but, you know, Reed's keeping an eye on everything going on here. You know, I mean, he's keeping an eye on Monster Island. He's talking with the Mole Man. He's, you know, maybe keeping a wary eye on Doom Iron Man or whatever, you know, wherever they end up doing this stuff, you know, because we've got issues to go. I don't want to see him like, you know, Batman where he's paranoid of everything, but I could see Reed being the guy who, you know, yeah, I could take care of the Hulk if we needed to, but we don't need to, you know.
I like that stuff. Again, one of the things I like about Dan Slott when he writes at Marvel is he knows Marvel history and he's not afraid to play with it.
And he's going to go somewhere. I mean, the way he ended up in Spider-Man, you know, I'm reading some of the old stuff he's done and you're like, oh, wow, it's a little different. You know, it comes out differently now than when you look forward to the final act he's doing, like in Amazing Spider-Man.
And he says he wants to stay on at least, what is it, like 50-some issues to bring the book up to issue 700? Yeah, he wants to bring it to at least issue 700. But I'm just happy the Fantastic Four are back. I hope that they have figured out a way to have it sell in this marketplace. And I really hope they don't go with, well, the last run was super cosmic, so we need to go above and beyond that. No.
Well, yeah, considering they've already met...
getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. You can't keep doing that.
They have met almost everybody. Yeah, that's maybe the better idea. Who haven't they met yet? And let's go with it. They've even met... who's the big guy in charge of everything? Looks like Jack Kirby when he wants to.
Oh, God.
Yeah, they've already been there. Been there, done that. Got a copy of the home game.
I actually liked it when Byrne had Mr. Fantastic fight Dr. Octopus, because they were both scientists. They both had similar powers.
Oh, yeah.
Look around for stuff like that.
Well, they did some really neat tie-ins, too, because, you know, first of all, he was going through his paranoid phase. Whenever he saw Spider-Man, he would freak out. They had the black costume, which was being held by Reed, escape, thanks to what we found out later. Was it Doom or Kristoff that was poking around the lab? And, of course, that shows up in Web of Spider-Man 1. Be involved in the Marvel Universe somewhere. If there's something going on, and not just, you know, well, we tried to call the Fantastic Four, couldn't get a hold of them. That's almost unconscionable. I can't even say the word.
Unconscionable.
Thank you. Because in this day and age, it's almost impossible not to reach someone unless they don't want to be reached. I mean, I could see somebody in the middle of a conversation or middle of a fight, I'll say, bing, bing, hey, yeah, Captain America, could you help us with Terrax on the east side? No, we're a little busy right now, you know, and tie that into the book. I just tried to call FF and they're not around. But, you know, just the little touches. And Slott does that. So I have no doubt that's going to do it. I saw a little bit of it when I was raving 2 weeks ago about the Lee and Kirby, Nick Fury, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff. Because, you know, you got an idea that there was a big war going on. It was going on in Iron Man. It was going on in Tales of Suspense, as well as Strange Tales. I just finished reading some stuff, and again, I'm getting ahead of myself because it's going to be in the geeking. But same thing, they're referring to little bits of things that happened in the past that are happening current. I mean, you got to think that, there you go, let's have Reed needs to get some permits to reestablish the Fantastic Four building. He's got to go talk to the Kingpin. There's an interesting conversation, but... you know, the Marvel Universe is your playground. And, you know, again, I agree with what you said, Corey. I want to see some new stuff. I want to see some of the old stuff. I would be happy if there wasn't a Galactus story in the entire 50-issue run. I would be happy if they don't even refer to the Infinity Stones, Gauntlet Gems, trinkets you get out of a quarter box. You know, the other thing I'd like to see is...
Red Ghost and the Super Apes.
Now you're talking. Make him interesting. But there,
oh,
you know,
he already is interesting because they're apes.
Yes.
Even though one of them's you. An orangutan.
Yeah. An orangutan. He's not part of the ape family.
Doesn't matter. I want
not
to see
a monkey.
Him. I want to see him.
So.
You know, bring back the goofy stuff, too.
When they said Dan Slott, though, they had me. Because I'm like, I've loved his run on Spider-Man. I'm definitely for that. There's really, you know, I'm excited to see where he's going. Hopefully he's not listening to the show, because I know sometimes the creators are, damn it, I have to get rid of that storyline because those dumbasses figured it out.
Yes, we figured out that your main villain for your run will be the Red
D-Man
and the Super Apes.
What? Oh, sorry. How would you deal with the kids?
I think the kids should drive the story from time to time.
Now, are
one
we,
thing, one thing I would do, I would go to Chris Iliopoulos, and I would say, yeah, that Franklin Richards series you were doing, let's do it again.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, you've got these two superpowered kids who are, you know, Valeria's a super genius, and Franklin's got more power than any character in the Marvel Universe, blah, blah, blah. That can drive stories. But I also think that the fact that they're a family should be what drives it. Let's face it, Joe, The Incredibles, the best Fantastic Four movie ever made.
Exactly.
So there are a lot of different directions they can go. I do want them to be the heart of the Marvel Universe because that's how they started. They were the foundation. And every so often, you know, the heart of the Marvel Universe moves to a different book. In the 80s and 90s, the heart of the Marvel Universe was the X-Men. Then in the 2000s, it was the Avengers. I think it's time for it to come back to the Fantastic Four, where that's where the big stuff happens.
Now, you've touched upon one thing that will probably become a freaking of mine in the future. How many Fantastic Four books do you want?
One Fantastic Four book and then a kid's book with Franklin.
And they did say they're going to keep Marvel 2-in-1 around, which I'm cool with that.
I have no problem with that. I just wonder if it's going to continue to be the Thing and the Human Torch, or if it's going to turn into kind of a team-up book of the Thing and somebody. And the problem is, if they do that, it won't last, because team-up books don't last anymore, which kind of annoys me.
Yeah, or bring it back as a special thing. I don't know. They did say they were going to try to keep it around, though, so I'm a little suspect at that. And if you're going to have, you know, I love John Byrne when he did that whole run with Mr. Fantastic disappeared. We don't know what happened. He was working on Alpha Flight. Sue Richards ended up going to help them. And then they came back into Fantastic Four. So if you're going to weave some cool stories, you know, do it like that as opposed to, you know, okay, this is crossover part one, then you got to go buy another book for part two and crossover, you know. I don't like being forced to buy extra books. They did that in Avengers. I had to go buy Champions if I wanted a story. Nope, I just stopped buying both. They were doing it in, did they do that? One of the X books? It was like they got to the first six issues and the next ones, we're crossing over with other things. And I'm like, nope, I'm out. So, you know, just let them be themselves for a while.
Although Spider-Man should show up in the second issue looking for a job.
Oh, that would be awesome. I'd like to see, I could see everybody in the Marvel Universe being on, like, Richard's speed dial.
Yes.
You know, could you see him in the middle of a battle? Loki? No, Doctor Strange. Oh, sorry. I have a question on this. Oh, blah, blah, blah. Okay, thank you. Click and just hang up like, what? That was it? But he should, you know, if he does that, he should be more of a positive thing, right? You know, Batman was, I have a way to defeat everybody. And, you know, if Mr. Fantastic went that route, I'd see it more of as a positive thing, you know. Well, you know, I can stop them, but, you know, just so they don't hurt themselves, you know, or whatever. And find someone who can draw Kirby backgrounds. And I want lots of fun Easter eggs in the background.
I want machinery.
I want to be able to go back and look at that and go, oh, that was what was that ultimate horn thing from S.H.I.E.L.D. number 5, you know? He's got it. Just like I always figured, Doctor Strange should be a repository of almost every artifact that ever had something to do in the mystic world. Reed Richards should eventually get a hold of everything somehow, you know? And, I mean, I go through and I read these old things, you know, and just like, yeah, I could see a gauntlet, Infinity Gauntlet, sitting in the back of Reed's shop somewhere. Fake. Doesn't work with that.
Fake.
Kind of like in the JLA Avengers where they had those objects of power. Could you see, you know, let's mix a few DC ones in there just to see if anybody's really paying attention. Be able to go, hey, that's what's his name. Or So I would say we are jazzed to see the Fantastic Four come back.
And we predicted it, too.
Yeah, that's true.
So, when I said, oh, look, hey, they're reprinting those Fantastic Four omnibuses.
See, and this is why you have to listen. We may be blathering on like idiots.
But we know what we're talking about.
And people are listening. Hi, Mom!
Your mom's listening?
I hope not. I'd be in trouble for the swear words I said earlier.
My mom would probably go, oh, he's still talking about comic books.
What is wrong with that guy?
I shouldn't have given him those when he was 3.
It's my fault.
So that's the big comic news. The other news that I wanted to talk about is something that kind of slipped under the radar, but lately I've been thinking about it more and more. You know how DC is starting all these different comic lines? You know, here's the Metal line, and here's the Young Animals line, and here's this Sandman line, and here's this. Yeah. One of the lines they announced kind of made me perk my ears up. And then when I started digging into it, it's like, ooh, they've done a lot of research. They are looking to do young adult graphic novels to break into the young adult market. And one of the things that they're starting to do is they're reaching out to writers who are in that market to write these books. Now, Joe, you go to the Target store, don't you? You're a Often. Minnesotan.
Often, yeah, you have. That's, I think, in order to be Minnesotans, you have to shop at Target. Now, the key is to shop at Target. You just go in for one item,
because and then you leave with 50,
about 100. Yeah.
But you've been to their book section. I remember when their book section had tons of paperback books.
Had books.
And now, not so much.
No, a lot of that has been kind of drying up.
So what kind of books do they have at the Target book section, Joe?
It's me. I never look at their books anymore.
They have a lot of young adult books. I would say since the Harry Potter thing exploded, young adult books... Well, first off, I've heard that young adult books are the number one growth category still. And a lot of writers who were writing, you know, regular fiction have changed it because publishers are looking for young adult fiction because it sells better. You know, if you can sell to kids 11 all the way up to, you know, adults, you've got a better market than, you know, writing for, you know, 18 and 20 year olds up, because they don't buy as many books. And if you get a hit in the young adult section, you get your Harry Potters, you get your Golden Compasses, you get your Maze Runners, you get your Twilight. So with DC jumping into that market, that's one thing. The other thing is that Superhero Girls that DC does that I didn't pay any attention to at all because I'm not a tween girl.
That we know of.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
They don't grow beards.
Okay, we'll leave that at that.
They don't grow gray beards.
I'm not saying nothing.
And they don't wear New Japan Wrestling hoodies.
Not that you are aware of.
I'm wearing a New Japan Wrestling hoodie. But anyway, I had no idea that that stuff was as popular as it was. Once you get outside the comic market, those books are DC's number one sellers now. It used to be the Vertigo books, and now it's the Superheroes Girls. It's making tons of money. So with DC jumping into that market, a lot of people in the industry are saying DC is trying to position themselves for when the comic market does finally collapse. Your opinion?
That's funny. I'm reading an article on Comic The Beat at comicbeat.com talking about the inevitable direct market implosion. And I was rumbling around in the background while you were talking because I ran across some other previous attempts at entering the young book market through a line called, was it Minx?
Yes.
Which I don't think it lasted very long, but some of the books were actually very good. So maybe if DC taps into Time Warner's book division, and again, that's hard to do because it's a vertical company, not like Disney where it's a horizontal company, where if Marvel Comic wants to have Disney books do a bunch of Marvel books for the upcoming Infinity War, yeah, let's do it. In a vertical company, everybody's their own little fiefdom. AOL found that out the hard way when they tried to consume Time Warner and make it a multimedia platform for everything, because the guys in the record division don't necessarily want to work with the guys in the book division and so on. I talked a long time ago about people are asking Straczynski, why weren't there any Babylon 5 toys? Well, I couldn't get anybody else interested in doing them. I couldn't get anybody interested in doing comics. I couldn't get anybody interested in doing books. You know, we had this potential franchise that could have broke out like Star Wars and Star Trek, but Time Warner is very, when you're in charge of your little fiefdom, you know, you've got your narrow tunnel vision. You're not looking to the guys next to you, because if you do, that means you're paying them out of your bottom line.
Right.
And when the bomb, when the guy up above comes down and knocks on your door, you know, say, well, look, we sold a bunch of these toys, but we didn't make much on them because we gave all the licensing fee to the TV division. And Disney's that way as well, but they're also more, you have a guy up top who can direct, hey, I want some Star Wars little kids books. Marvel says, well, we're not set to do it. Okay, let's give it to, who's doing it? IDW? Somebody's publishing
them. IDW's doing them.
So they work to make the money, and they're a little bit quicker at doing it than a vertical company would be. So that's one of the, again, that's the suggestion I would have. I don't know if they're going to do that, or it sounds like they want to. I don't know if DC has enough clout where they can actually say, hey, we're DC Comics, and we have this new adult line. And all the book people will go, yeah, very nice, very nice. Get in line with everybody else.
Or if they say, you know, we got this new kids line, and it's a proven, you know, the superhero girls is kind of a proven commodity at this point. They should be able to get into Target and Walmart and places like that based on that. The fact that, well, the toys sell and the, you know, this sells and this sells and this sells. So now we're going to have books. Whereas Minx was very much a kind of a, okay, I think it was more creator-owned, kind of a Vertigo type thing where people would say, hey, here's my book. And DC would kind of go, oh, okay. But with Superhero Girls, DC owns all of it. You know, they own lock, stock, and barrel. It's not like Minx where it's, okay, we'll publish your stuff. Maybe we'll give you the rights. Maybe we'll just lease the rights. They don't own it. So if there's a big movie, they get a piece of it, but they don't own it. And one of the big things about Marvel and DC, and it's been this way forever since they became multimedia companies, they need to own it.
Well, I'm reading here about Minx, and it was around 2007 to 2008. It was made in order to publish graphic novels aimed at teenage girls. And it just sounded like I'll just read the quote. Multiple sources say Bond and DC are not to blame for Minx's cancellation, that the development should be seen as a depressing indication that a market for alternative young adult comics does not exist in the capacity to support an initiative of this kind, if at all. And maybe now it does. There's certainly big young adult sections. And one of the things with Minx is the downfall. The problem was is that the distributor Random House couldn't get books in the young adult sections of major bookstores. And what's even worse now is there's hardly any major bookstores since 2008 when Minx originally collapsed.
Yeah.
So hopefully they got a better game plan than what they originally tried. And they 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. They did 12 books before they finally canceled. And some of them actually were announced, but they ended up, I think one of them, All Nighter, ended up going to Image in 2011. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what they do, if they can do it. I understand why they're doing it. You almost got to concede right away that you probably don't have the direct market support in this, except for very enlightened stores that actually have a teenage market that they can sell to.
And there aren't a lot of those.
No.
More and more of the stores that I go to, they all have the same thing. So, one of the things that I read also, Marvel has decided that they're going to bring a lot of the Marvel Knights stuff back into print with a 20th anniversary of Marvel Knights. But also, in the article on The Beat that I sent you, it talks about how Marvel is also re-looking at their trade paperback, how they store their trade, not store, but how they market their trade paperbacks, because they treat them a lot like periodicals. They come out, and okay, it's been, you know, 6 months, 8 months, 9 months, 10 months, time to bargain them out. Which means that, let's say, you want to go pick up the Grant Morrison X-Men run. Okay, well, you know, we had hardcovers. Oh, they're all out of print. We had an omnibus. It's out of print. Trade paperbacks. Well, this two of the six of them are out of print. Well, then screw it. Why would I buy that?
Yeah.
Yes, I could buy them digitally. But that was one of the things that kept Vertigo making tons of money. It's, oh, Sandman's always in print. Transmetropolitan's always in print. Preacher's always in print.
You know, and that's funny because I'll talk about it when I get to geeking again. All this foreshadowing. Ooh, exciting. But I was out geeking, going to different comic shops and looking for specific books. And it's amazing how many places you'll go and you'll find, okay, they have issues 1, 5, and 7 of a 12-issue run of graphic novels.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was something when I had my shop, at least Hot Comics, I was very meticulous about checking that to the point of every week I'd take a rundown. I could have doubled, if not tripled, my order just for paperbacks and graphic novels of things that sold because, you know, you had to make, if you had Sandman, what's the use of having, you know, 1, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. If you're missing the ones in the middle, they're just going to go somewhere else and they probably won't come back to you. Even to the point where sometimes I had to make sure, okay, Watchmen, you know, 4 copies, 2 of each Sandman, 2 of each Bone. Star Wars was really big with Dark Horse then. And then you come down to individual titles, Dark Knight, Kingdom Come, Marvels. Again, too many books? I don't know. I don't do comics anymore, so I don't know. But there are a ton of graphic novels, and you're not one. If you don't have it, they're going to probably just go to Amazon. Hopefully eBay's, like my eBay store. But
we'll talk about that later.
90%, yeah, we will. 90% of it, they'll just go right to Amazon. Or, you know, they will check out the eBay's to see if they can find it for less. So, and I'll talk a little bit more about that when we get to geeking, because I finally did find one of my graphic novels that I've been dying to buy at a comic book shop, almost bought on the eBays, but didn't, and then finally got around to it. So,
but the article in The Beat talks about how, and it's funny, I've been saying this for 349 episodes. Back in the 90s, in the 2000s, DC killed Marvel when it came to total money for the year, even though Marvel outsold DC with new comics, because they had the back stock. They had all the archives. They had all the paperbacks that they'd done. They had, you know, they had a deep bench. I was amazed when I read that the Kevin Smith Daredevil has been out of print at Marvel for years. That's a book that should always be in print. It's Kevin Smith. It's Joe Quesada. You should always have that in print. The Inhumans by Jay Lee and I forget who the writer was. That was out of print. when the TV series was on. You know, even though the TV series didn't do that well, people might go, huh, where are the Inhumans? The good thing is Black Panther, they got all that in print, but how long is that going to stay in print with Marvel doing the, it's been 9 months, get rid of it.
Well, considering the one thing we predicted that didn't come true, they didn't do Infinity War Omnibus. I thought for sure they would do that. If not the Omnibus, at least have the trades up and running.
You know, you should not be out of this stuff. And one thing that I read was with Quesada taking a much stronger hand in the publishing arm, he got his job because he said, we need trade paperbacks out for the movies. So maybe he kind of stepped in and went, look at this, we got to have these. Because it is, it's losing money. If you don't have these books, you're losing money. You know, if you don't have these Spider-Man books for the big Spider-Man events, you're losing money. Because people are always going to want to read, they're always going to want to read the Todd McFarlane stuff. They're always going to want to read the Death of Gwen Stacy. They're always going to want to read those early Ditko books. All of your big Spider-Man, you should always have the Kraven the Hunter story. Those should just be a given that they're always available. And the problem is with Marvel, it's okay, it's out of print. Oh, put it out as a hardcover now. Oh, it's out of print. Do it as an omnibus. Oh, it's out of print. Do it as an epic book. It's out of print. Do it as a digest. It's out of print. No, the Sandman books. I remember when they were so hot that if they changed the trade dress on them, you would get all the gothy girls who would come in, oh, it's got new covers, we got to buy them. Or, you know, they did the first three in paperback and they sold so well, they went back and did hardcovers. Which, you know, no one had heard of that before. Because it's usually hardcover then softcover. And they went, oh, the softcovers are selling so well, we're doing hardcovers now. But one of the things, especially with us comic fans, we want consistency. I still remember Gruber losing his mind when they changed the trade dress on the Marvel Masterworks.
Oh, yeah. And unfortunately, well, and he's still kind of sore because he always orders that classic design because he wants it all to look the same. And I understand that. And then, you know, where he was ordering it through kept sending him the wrong one, even though for a time you'd pay $5 extra to get that because he made a smaller print run of it. And I don't know how he ended up. I don't know if he's still has them or if he's if he just let him go. I'll have to buzz him sometime and ask him about that.
But you know, we're nerds. We want this stuff, and we want it to look good on a shelf. I remember when I was buying the Runaways. It's like, oh, okay, here's a big hardcover of the first 24 issues. Now here's a digest of the next six, and a digest of the next six. Now here's a trade paperback. It's like, oh, God, people. The fact that the Joss Whedon X-Men books are out of print is insane. Especially with John Cassaday, who drew it as one of the hottest artists in comics, and there aren't a lot of hot artists anymore. Hot artist.
Nobody's hot.
You know who is hot, Joe?
Hot, hot.
These guys, our sponsors.
That's right, here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network, we have ads, and our first sponsor is me. That's right, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. I have my first book out with Dangerous Dan Moore. It's the first 100 strips of our online web strip, Worldwide News, the story of the lowest-rated cable news network. And you can get yourself a copy with commentary, with all sorts of extras, with signatures and everything. Just email Dan over at lordshadowflame@gmail.com. Our top sponsor, who's been with us since day one, is DreamHost. DreamHost.com. You need yourself a website, and DreamHost.com is the number one web host in the whole known universe. Just head over to DreamHost.com, put in the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, get $20 off your first year. How can you beat that? Our other sponsor is Graze, G-R-A-Z-E.com. Healthy snacks for a healthy lifestyle. Just head over to Grays, put in the code CORYS3R5P. Your first and fifth box are free. You could get them weekly. You could get them bi-weekly. You could get them monthly. You just order a whole bunch of them. It's great stuff to keep you away from the vending machine at work. Now, if you would like to leave a comment for any of the podcasts that we do, we'd love those. Go ahead and email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, or you can call 952-856-0519. Operators are standing by. Okay, it's just a place that we'll record your calls, but we'll play them on the air. We'll answer your questions. We love getting feedback. Tell us what you think. Ask a question. Suggest a topic. Be a guest. Send us your stuff. SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com. If you would like to advertise on any of the Solitaire Rose radio shows, you can. Just email us at SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com. Subject, advertising. Thanks.
We like sponsors.
Yes, we do. And if you want to be a sponsor, we told you how to do it. We're looking for new sponsors because our numbers are pretty big. We got big numbers.
Big. We're huge. We're big. We're bigger than big.
We are a national treasure.
And we're not for sale. Well, unless you want to buy advertising.
Hell yeah. We're for sale.
But not for you, the listener. It's always free for you, the listeners.
Hey, if one of the listeners wants to buy out the Solitaire Rose Network, I'll let them. And if you do buy out the Solitaire Rose Network, you get these podcasts as well.
The Solitaire Rose Radio Network has all sorts of podcasts. We've got Scrabbling Across the West with Dave Cafell and his lovely bride, Stephanie. They travel across the country playing musical gigs, and at night they sit down to play Scrabble and talk about their day at scrabbling.solitairerose.com. There's Novelcast over at novels.solitairerose.com, where I take the novels that I've written and turn them into audio podcasts. Currently, we are doing a novel called Do the Job, which is a murder mystery set in the world of 1980s professional wrestling. Then over at badadvice.solitairerose.com, me, Corey Strode, and Wolfie B. Bad, along with Dan Moore, give bad advice to people who send in questions. That's bad advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network is growing. Be there! You think NBC will get mad I used that?
Ooh, how was that for a transition, Joe? How'd that work?
I got a whiplash.
We're doing it on a Monday. When I did college radio, we used to do Whiplash Wednesdays.
Oh yeah, I've heard that all over.
Where we
they had one at the radio station I was at. It was always heavy metal on that day.
No. We would play one song and then follow it up by a song that just completely different. Because one of the things they try to tell you in radio is you try to have a blend. You know, if you go for an up-tempo song, the next song should, you know, if you're going to transition to a down-tempo song later, you should kind of transition by having one that's in between. Not us, man. We'd play the Ramones and follow it up with 60s country music, follow that up with ska, and Whiplash Wednesday. But we don't do Whiplash here. We do eBay. And we're now to Joe's favorite part of the show, where Joe plays with his death figure.
Oh, I thought I got to eat more pie.
No. It's where Joe talks about what's going on the eBays. Joe?
I got lots of things. I just got to 4,800 positive feedbacks.
How many negative?
I don't know. They tend to disappear after time.
Oh, that's good.
And I don't even dwell on the negatives because, for the most part, I work hard to make sure if you get something and you don't like it, I always ask, what do you want to, what can I do to make it better? You want a return? You want a refund on shipping?
I want a hug.
No, you don't get one because you always say you don't want one. I'm not giving you something you don't want. After all those years, you had all these hot redheads lined up, and then I want brunette.
No, I did not have hot redheads lined up.
You did. How would you know? You never opened the door.
Yeah, I did.
If you had, you would have seen that I sold a copy of Frank Zappa, Viva La Bizarre #1 from Revolutionary Comics, which we talked about, I think, last episode. Weren't we talking about that one?
I don't think so. We were talking about Revolutionary Comics.
Yeah, just in general.
And how the publisher was
constantly being sued.
Well, and murdered, and his murder has never been solved.
So don't mess with the music industry, which is the bottom line. But I had a copy of this when Frank Zappa, and it was going out for a birthday gift. So hopefully it arrives quickly. I sold a copy of The Unexpected, number 157 from DC. Corey, tell us about The Unexpected.
The Unexpected was one of the DC horror or mystery titles, and I think that's the one that was introduced by the Three Witches.
Yeah. I don't ever recall reading it. 157 itself.
It was okay.
Yeah. This was a 100-pager one, and it had reprints from like House of Mystery, like 83, 92, House of Secrets 1. It might have just been all – I don't know if there's anything new in it because I never really read it. And it was kind of a very good copy, so it didn't quite get the big, you know, 30, 40 bucks a near mint one might. But good art, you know, Sheldon Moldoff, Jim Mooney, Rich Buckler. Let's see, what else? Have we ever talked about Meridian from CrossGen?
We have not. We haven't talked a lot about CrossGen. I thought CrossGen's marketing was great.
Yeah, we've talked about the marketing because, of course, they came and they actually talked to retailers before they actually sold the books. And our Dan Wiesemeyer from Hot Comics went down and talked to the guys, and they listened, and everything was going good. And I think Marvel owns them now, don't they?
Yes. And you always say Marvel should bring them back. Well, what it was, Disney bought them.
Okay.
Disney bought the whole kit and caboodle because they wanted the rights to Azkaban. Which is, you know, they wanted to buy Azkaban, and the guy said, well, you can buy the whole company, and Disney went, oh, okay. And then Marvel brought it back. They did two miniseries, one for the Mark Waid detective book, and I forget the other one. But the Mark Waid detective book was called Ruse, and I don't remember what the other one was. And they sold terrible. The first issue didn't even break 10,000 copies. So they were like, well, nobody cares. Because they brought back the original creative team and said, here, do a miniseries so that we can judge if people are interested. People weren't interested. So it's just one of those that's sitting on the shelf because...
Yep. Hey, 2003 CrossGen itself found itself in a scandal over freelancer payments. There were financial problems. I think MegaCon... Restructured in 2003, selling to MegaCon, but it went bankrupt again in 2004, ceased publishing, and Disney was interested in the licensed content, and then they just bought it all. So, and I don't know if they've done anything with it. I guess.
Yeah, they did those two miniseries.
Yeah, like I said, they didn't do anything with it. But Meridian was Barbara Kessel's baby, and... It was just one of the, I guess the main character of the series is Steffi, daughter of Turos, the minister of Meridian. I'm already bored. Anyways, I had a couple of the books. I still do. And, you know, I just price them cheap, let them go, because there were some good reading in some of that stuff. Corey, you ever read Gen 13 Grunge, the movie trade paperback from Wildstart/Image/DC?
I read all of the Gen 13 stuff, and even though it was kind of goofy and very much of its time, I thought it was a lot of fun.
Well, this one was really fun because Adam Warren did it, the guy who does...
Yes! He did Dirty Pair. What's the name of the book he does? Empowered.
Empowered from Dark Horse, yes. And I met him at a con. Nice guy. Very nice guy. And this was a tough one to get rid of because I do enjoy it, but then I found out I had two copies, so what the hell. Another one, this one comes under the category of you probably wouldn't have bought it even if I told you. But in 2009, and I think they came out with Supergirl Cosmic Adventures in the Eighth Grade. It was an all-ages book where Supergirl was in junior high. And it was six issues. It had superpowered pets. It had cosmic adventures. It might be close to like what you're talking about, the superpowers line. But nobody bought it. And consequently, back issues on some of them, like number six, near mints at 25. Number three, near mints at 49. $6. I had the whole run, and I just blew it off for $30 because that's the way I am. I like to sell things on the cheap. And, Corey, can you guess? There were three issues in Ultron Forever number three. I'm sorry. It was Ultron Forever. It's a crossover. Avengers, New Avengers, and Uncanny Avengers. It was just like standalone specials. Can you guess for this shiny new dime? Well, it's on the bottom of the pile, but I'll dig it out for you alone. How much did I sell this three-issue comic set for?
$5.
Less.
Really? $3?
Less.
$1.
Well, a little bit more. $1.99.
Ooh.
Yes, I
took a bath. People should have taken advantage of that.
They should have. Well, somebody did. And those were the last six things that I sold on eBay's. And, of course, well, what the heck? I'll mention it. It's going to be snowing like bejesus tomorrow. It's going to be one of my freakings. But that means I'm going to be home putting stuff on eBay. So my laziness is your, possible treasure. So check it out, K-R-A-Y-Z, crazy. Let me know you're listening to this here podcast, like the person who bought the Supergirl Cosmic Adventure did, and I kind of cut the price on it for them a little bit. And I might do something nice for you. Well, I know I will do something nice for you. Let's come get some.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show.
Oh,
no.
Oh.
No. Not where we break down the 1998 uncensored WCW pay-per-view. It's freaking and geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
Kind of a gut punch, because a couple days ago, as we're recording, I guess creator Gerald Jones pleaded guilty to two felony counts of possession and distribution of child pornography. And kind of a gut punch because it's somebody, I mean, Corey and I have been through this before. The pro wrestler Chris Benoit, we don't know what happened. He killed his kid. He killed his wife. Corey and I have watched him wrestle for years. We admired him wrestling, but it's just, how in the world could you even watch him wrestle again, knowing what happened? And it's kind of the same thing that's going on here. Gerald Jones has written tons of things. Green Lantern, Justice League, co-created Prime, wrote Ultra Force. And I'm like, you know what? This kind of just killed any deal probably to bring back the Ultra Force or the Ultraverse, because, you know, how can you bring any of these characters back? There's no way Marvel / Disney is going to want to affiliate themselves with anything dealing with that type of stuff. So that was kind of a gut punch, you know. It's almost like all of the runs he did, you're just not going to look at it the same, you know, no matter how good it was. I got to admit, in my brain, I when I saw Gerald Jones, I was thinking Jeff Jones. I was like, oh my God, wait, he's running DC. That can't be right. Thank God for Google to straighten my brain out before I came on out. I can't believe he did that. I mentioned the weather. I don't mind it. I don't mind when it snows. I don't freak out. Yeah, it's April. It's snowing. Who cares? People are. As a matter of fact, even as we're sitting here, I'm watching huge flakes cover my neighbor's rooftop. And when we started, it was totally bare. So that just means tomorrow I'll do one of two things. I'll fire up that four-wheel drive and go do some geeking, check around some of the comic stores in town. Or I will just probably, like I said earlier, just sit here and reach into my vast accumulation of crap and put some of that their stuff on the eBays, like I want to do. So that's pretty much it for me freaking-wise. Corey, what's got you freaked?
Once again, I went on the fire-breathing Twitter machine. And whiny bitches are complaining about comic creators and editors having opinions. One of the Marvel female editors made a joke about Easter. And, this is terrible. What a horrible person. And then they also had, Eric Larson had a thing where, you know, he had a picture of the Bible. Said, this does not prove that God exists. And then he had a picture of the Marvel Treasury Edition number one. This does not prove that Spider-Man exists. Oh, how terrible. And all I could think when I saw those is,
If you people are upset by those opinions, wait till you run into Harlan Ellison.
Oh, Harlan Howard Ellison, Chaykin. Where are you now? Oh, Howard Chaykin.
Or Neil Adams. Or Colleen Duran. Or any of the other people who do not give a shit about your whiny-ass opinions. Comic creators have opinions. Get used to it. Deal with it. I'm sorry it upsets you that they don't believe as you do. But in the real world, people have their own opinions. And I can't wait for one of these whiny little right-wing snowflake bitches to run into Howard Chaykin, who's been obliterating people since the 70s. Harlan Ellison's been doing it since the 60s. And they don't feel like putting up with your shit.
If you can't discuss it intelligently, just shut up.
If you're whining about a comic creator having an opinion that's different from yours, I don't know, maybe not read his books. I don't agree with everything Roy Thomas says, but I still love his writing. I don't agree with everything that Pat Broderick says, still love his art.
I'd love it even more if I get my print.
I do original love everything art. Don McGregor says. So.
Yeah.
Second, TV scheduling annoys the piss out of me, and I'm sick of it. I am so tired of, it's Stephen Colbert. Well, he only did Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. He was off Thursday and Friday. Or, hey, the last week tonight with is back. Oh, wait, yeah, they did 2 weeks, took a week off, did 3 weeks, took a week off. Did a week, took 2 weeks off. That's why I like Netflix. Here you go. Here's all of them. Although Netflix does have a show that comes out every Sunday, and I like the fact that they even made a point on Easter. It came out on Easter Sunday, and the host said, "You thought we were taking the week off." Sorry, Netflix doesn't allow me to take a week off for Easter. Geeking Joe, what are you geeking on?
Sorry, I had the mute on.
Oh.
I do that when I, scratch myself like this. I figure no one needs to hear that. We're finishing up. Well, we're not finishing. We're actually in the fourth season of Hogan's Heroes because for some reason we're going backwards. It really doesn't matter what season you watch Hogan's Heroes in. And
you mean there was really, no character development?
Thank God there isn't, because it is just so ultimately silly. It's just almost a delight to watch. I mean, and we're thinking silly because, of course, now Netflix, I believe, has Monty Python on it. So we may
not
take
yet, but it's coming.
Okay, put that in my freaking column.
And
it's
not just the movies, but the TV series.
Yes, I know. And I have the TV series in DVD form. It's just I want it, where I can sit on my ass and just turn on Netflix instead of getting up, putting the disc in, taking the disc out. You see how lazy I'm getting? Reading-wise, in the category of rereading, I reread the last time I talked about Love and Capes. So I read the last comic arc where they are expecting their baby. And again, a fantastic, fantastic run. Anybody who reads superhero comics should give these a chance because they are delightful. They're fun. We've talked about it in the past. We'll talk about it in the future because sooner or later I'm going to pull those things down and reread them. Just like I did this. Corey, this is only worth a nickel. Sorry. Tell me about Kingdom Come. Have you ever heard of this little book?
Kingdom Come was Mark Waid and Alex Ross kind of letting people know what they think about the violent image characters that were big in the 90s. It's set in the future of DC when a imagey type character named Magog shows up and
I don't think there's any spoilers on this one. This thing was published how long ago?
Well, 20 years.
Yeah, so
they've also done Elliot S. Magan wrote a novelized adaptation. They also did an audiobook version that was more like a radio play.
And they're all wonderful because I've read all of them. When I took a ride down to a retailer show with Nick and Brian Wilson, we listened to that, and it was just fantastic. You know, the same story in all three different versions, but just a little different in each one, and it adds to it. And I have the absolute version, because it has, of course, the annotated stuff in the background where, you know, he says, okay, look here, you'll see in the background there are the Monkey Men. Over here you'll see there's the Shadow, and, you know, check closer, the Spectre's eyes, you know. Just a lot of fun because, you know, I'm a geek. I like that stuff. I also have a regular size hardcover that was published in 97, and that's the one I pull down and read. And, you know, I got to admit, when I first read Kingdom Come, I just flew through it. Because I was dying to see how it ended. You know, you kids these days don't understand what it's like. You just go buy the graphic novel. I had to wait months between. And I believe it was on time. I don't believe this one was late. And if it was, I
that one was on time because Alex Ross is kind of meticulous about such things.
And it was, you know, the art was amazing because there wasn't a lot of photorealistic art in comics at the time. So he was kind of groundbreaking in that. And if you
remember,
it
came out after Marvels. So Alex Ross was already a huge superstar. And people were kind of, what's he going to do next? What's he going to do next? What's he going to do next?
And the funny thing is, and I argue with people about this constantly, from friends I know that are in the commercial art industry, they're not impressed with Alex Ross's work because they're like, we do that all the time.
Yep.
But Alex Ross was, again, the first person to bring it really into the comic medium. Just like who did, was it Infinity Crisis? A murder mystery?
Oh, yeah, that was, now I can't think of his name, but it's a guy who writes a lot of,
yeah,
Brad Metzger.
Again, I was impressed because I don't read a lot of mysteries, and that was fantastic. And I know for you, Corey, you're like, that was good, but I knew who did it because he did the murder mystery.
He used all the same tropes as a murder mystery novel.
And so you knew it because you read murder mystery. And for those of us in comics, we didn't. And we're like, this is cool. In the category of, I can't believe I've never read it, but I finally got around to it. I picked up the IDW copy of The Wizard's Tale by Kurt Busiek and David J. Wenzel.
Yes.
Oh, I can't believe I waited this long. I mean, this came out, what, originally from Image? Was it, or was it Wildstorm?
I just know it was a long time ago.
Yeah. And
it has to be at least 20 years ago that it came out.
I think it was Homage. It was originally
Homage.
And I don't know if it was Image at the time or by the time Jim Lee had sold all that to DC. But it came out there. Image had a version. And then IDW snapped up the rights and recolored it, redid something to it, but just it's a little bit bigger than the original version, and it's just fantastic. It's a land of Evernight where you have Raffarog Rumpelwhisker. He's an evil wizard from a long line of evil wizards. His job is to maintain darkness spells that keep his corner of the Evernight as dark as gloomy as the rest of it. And he has to find a lost book of worse, which holds magical spells that can crush the forces of light forever. There's only one problem. His heart's not quite into it, you know. The story was fun. The art is kinetic. It's detailed. I mean, there's stuff going on in every page. This book, I know I'm going to have to reread between now and next week because, having just read it, I was really caught up in the narrative and really didn't get a chance to just stop and look at what was going around and all the different artwork and things like that. And like I said, I got the IDW big version of it. I don't remember when this was published. I don't know if it's around, but 2010. So it's a little older, but go dig a copy of it out. A lot of fun. Another book. I don't know if this is under the category of my tastes are maturing, or I was an idiot when I first read it. But Black Orchid by Neil Gaiman and David McKean.
Yes.
Another outstanding, beautiful book that I had zero appreciation for when I first read it. Because I don't know. I don't know what the hell. I can't even fathom what I was thinking.
Comics had not done a lot of stuff like that before. That early burst of stuff from Vertigo, and I don't even think it was Vertigo at the time.
No, this was a DC book.
But there was a lot of the stuff that came out, and it was kind of ahead of the curve. People weren't used to that style of storytelling yet. So there were people like me who were snapping it up. But I remember this came out when I was working at Schindler's, and again, we couldn't give it away.
Yeah.
People would look at it, and they'd flip through, and they'd go, it's pretty, but I don't know what's going on, and the lettering's weird. And they'd put it back on the shelf.
Yeah. And I know I had the issues for the longest time, and I know they must have disappeared sometime during one of my eBay sales. But I picked this one up. I wonder. These were together. Actually, I got to confess. I took them out of my daughter's room.
When she wasn't looking.
No, she was looking. Oh. But I figured it was kind of a fair trade because I took 3 graphic novels to read, and I gave her my Infinity Gauntlet omnibus.
Okay.
With fair warning that it was probably worth more than her car. But the last one, of course, is another little one-shot book that probably nobody in their right mind would ever read. Batman the Killing Joke. This is the deluxe edition, so it's a little bit bigger than a normal comic. And, of course, Brian Bolan got to recolor the entire thing. And he adds some stuff. He had a little Batman story at the end. This one, I sat down, as with the other two books, and just – I know the narrative. Some of it I forgot. That tells you, maybe I'm stupid for giving away, selling my stuff because I go back and reread it and I totally forget it. But I just sat and I enjoyed the art, and I looked at some of the details. You just look at the different eyes. I don't know if I buy the idea that they said, Batman killed Joker at the end, because I never caught that in the beginning. And I read it thinking, no, I don't think I buy that either. But another book that if you've never read it, just pause this podcast and go get a copy of it.
Don't watch the movie of it.
No. Well, I would say skip the first part and maybe watch the actual adaptation of the movie, but I'm not going to try that yet. Utterly enjoyed back issue number 103. They had a part, it was basically kind of talking about the all-star editors. They started out talking with different editors about how they dealt with the dreaded deadline doom. Did a very nice piece on Archie Goodwin, a person who you wish you'd have met before he passed away, but responsible for just tons of things that I absolutely enjoy. I kind of skipped around. I read from Mark Grunwald's wife. She wrote a little brief thing on him. And, of course, the big thing was, when she went ahead and mixed the ink personally, I guess, into those first printing of Mark's favorite work, Squadron Supreme. So if you got yourself a purse print, you got Mark's ash all over yourself. I skipped ahead because I wanted to read about the Marvel Assistant Editor Month, which was either hit or miss depending on what your books were. And they basically went through everything, talked about which ones they did something weird with, which ones they didn't. For example, Thor 339, they didn't really do anything because it was only the third issue of Walt Simonson's run. But they did have a thing at the back, Carlin and Simonson's Page of Thor stuff. They did, we talked about Avengers 239, where they went on to Letterman. And, of course, Letterman's people were big hip with it. The infamous Alpha Flight 6, where John Byrne turned in a bunch of it's kind of a continuation of the humorous panel from What If number 34, where it goes, what if Silver Surfer, White Tiger, Knight Rider, Iceman, and Moon Knight fought Wendigo in a snowstorm? Well, John Byrne kind of went forward with that. And then, of course, the other two, it's all there, including some of the ones that I totally brain locked on, like the Saga of Crystar, Crystal Warriors number 5, which was a licensed product. And it was basically starts out with a 5-page sequence of Crystar discussing his troubles with the creative team, Bob Harris, writer Joe Duffy, and penciler Ricardo Villamonte, and the inker as well, Dave Simons. So, again, I wasn't reading Crystar, but it was part of it, so it counted. And they also included ROM and Micronauts and G.I. Joe. The best ones were I'm trying to find it. The Trial of Galact. Reed Richards is in there, which we were blabbing about earlier. That was Assistant Editor Month. But Amazing Spider-Man 248 had The Kid Who Collects Spider-Man. One of the... I tear up when I read this one because it is a story that Roger Stern wrote, and it's just heartbreaking. And, I mean, the book came out years ago, so I don't know if I'm giving away anything, but... Even if you got nothing else to do, pick up that one issue. I don't know if they ever reprinted this in anything.
They've probably reprinted it a few times.
I think they must have, so it's worth picking up. It's with great pain. I'm going to skip over the Peter Parker Spectacular Spider-Man 86, which has an issue mostly done by Fred Hembeck in Fred Hembeck style. Because, of course, we got to talk about what we were talking about, I think, last week. Marvel Team-Up 137. Twinkle or Twinkie, Twinkle, Twinkle, where Galactus comes down. It's not a hoax, not a what if, not an imaginary story, but Galactus comes down and empowers Aunt May to help her go out and find planets for him. And so she became a herald of Galactus. And of course, Aunt May decided to, he was actually trying to get Franklin, but Aunt May was babysitting. Hey, there you go. Bring that one up, Dan Slott. That would be kind of cool. And Franklin suggests Twinkie snack cakes. Twinkle. I can't say Twinkies. Sorry, almost lost it. Twinkle snack cakes might state Galactus's cosmic hunger. And, of course, when everybody woke up from their bad dream, it wasn't a hoax. Not a what if. Not an imaginary story.
It was probably
the craziest one of all of them. Way back, I got a book called Ringside from Scott M. Beekman, A History of Professional Wrestling in America. This reads, for the most part, as a textbook. As a matter of fact, I think it came out of a library system that my daughter. And it's just utterly fascinating. I've referred to it a couple times, but it covers really how wrestling turned from a legit sport into a shoot sport, how it became under the power of... I don't want to say bookers. We had territory, guys who ran the territories, how the NWA was created, how they would use it to kind of keep guys from going to business of themselves. There's stuff when they get into the modern age where Vince McMahon Jr., well, he's not really Jr., but they call him that, totally abolished that and basically destroyed the territory. So now WWE is pretty much the only game in town. This was published in... let me find the year here. 2006. So TNA was kind of popping around. I don't think Ring of Honor was around yet. A lot of notes, a lot of cliff notes. I found it most interesting because back in the day, wrestling was viewed as a legitimate sport. And so you could go to various newspapers and get the information right from the newspapers. And there was a couple guys who had, like 1931, they began publishing this stuff in Spirit of the Times. And, you know, Corey, I got to borrow you this book because I don't know how much of this stuff you know, but it's just fascinating watching how guys became champions and they would travel. And back then, you know, with the advent of television, how it changed things, how everything conglomerated in the territories, how it was just... When Turner took Georgia Champion Wrestling and threw it on a superstation, and the territories went crazy because, like, how can he? He's now broadcasting into our market. That's not right. A lot of this stuff we probably know because, you know, we're wrestling geeks as well. But the early stuff, especially going from coming over because it was really big, you know, with immigrants coming over, that's how they wrestled. How it became, how they tried to promote themselves, travel with carnies, how it changed from a shoot to a work. Just real interesting stuff. And it's thick, it's tense, and it reads like a textbook, but it was just fascinating. So if you really like wrestling and you want to know more about how it got to be as it is, this will give you the foundation of it. It's almost like the first book you should read if you care about the history. The last thing, I usually don't talk about books when we're halfway through them, but I ripped open my Solo the Deluxe Edition that I bought last year when we went up to Granite City for Free Comic Book Day. And I am about halfway through it. And we talked about how Howard Chaykin was probably somebody you don't want to...
you don't want to poke the bear.
Well, let me tell you, when I read his story, that one of the stories he had in here, first of all, Solo was a 12-issue miniseries from DC where they went to the creative team, mostly a solo person. And they I mean, it's a who's who. Tim Sale, Richard Corbin, Paul Pope, Howard Chaykin, Darwin Cook, Michael Aldred, Scott Hampton, Sergio Argoni, just to name the ones I've already read. And they let them do whatever. Do a romance story. Great. You want to do a spy story? Somebody brought one in with King Faraday. I just read a Dead Man story that was real poignant. That trying to find who Teddy Christensen.
Yep.
He did the art. And basically, he's a foreign guy who draws American comics, born in 64, and an Eisner Award recipient. Also, see Deadline Nightmare. Mike Elred did a really, really hilarious thing about a party going on by the Teen Titans in Bruce Wayne's penthouse apartment. Unfortunately, the Doom Patrol were underneath it trying to sleep for the day. Elred, you're nuts. But we were talking about, you know, people that were just crazy. I don't know why they don't do a book like this either at Marvel or DC again and just say, hey, let's pick out some guys and say, okay, you got 48 issues, do what you want. Take our characters, write your own stories. And I'm just having a delight. Again, that Howard Chaykin story I read and I went, wow, at the end of it. I never speak out loud when I'm reading stories. This one was so shocking and twisted. I just was like, oh. The deluxe edition's out and about. I would definitely go recommend it. And I imagine next week I'll be gabbing about it when we get to the finale and read the second half of it. In the Never Doubt the Strode department, I caved in and went in between Hot Comics, Discount Comic Book Service, Level Up Games in South St. Paul, and the final issue I found at St. Paul Comic College. I have caught up on Peter Parker Spectacular Spider-Man.
Told ya!
Oh, yeah. I've only read through issue 5, and I read issue 6. That's what got me. You recommended it a while back. And I had, okay, now I got to play catch up. And fortunately, I've got them, and I imagine I'll rave about them next week. In the category of, see, if you had it in your freaking store, I would have bought it. The award goes to Comic College because they had that sixth book of Proof called Proof in Danger, the final book. I read the first 5 a number of weeks ago, and I've been looking all over Hades trying to find it. And I just, Tim had it at Comic College. He didn't have all of them, but he did have this one. I bought it from him. And I could have bought it online or Amazon for less, but, you know, I like to support my local comic store. Matter of fact, I actually found I don't know if it's a new store or just one I never noticed before. Downtown St. Paul has one on 6 West 5th Street. Subtext Books. A small independent bookstore, very friendly person. I walked in and I didn't catch her name, but you know, I go in and they had a little graphic novel section, books all over. She can order books for you, packed to the gills. I know I overlooked something. I did see one book called 1918, which was a devastating year in history for Minnesota, because not only did we send people to World War I, and a number of them died. We had a couple fires up north that wiped out 7 counties and killed hundreds of people. The smallpox, no, influenza was going around. And that killed more people than both the fire and the people we sent to World War I. So I'm reading just this book, and I'm like, oh, I really got to buy this one of these days. But I decided to pick up a book called Monstrous from Image Comics. Set an alternative world of art deco beauty and steampunk horror, Monstrous tells the epic story of Makea Halfwolf, a teenage survivor of a cataclysmic war between humans and their hated enemies. And like Image does with all their books, their first one's $9.99. So I picked that up. Even Proof wasn't that bad. It was only $16.99. And, you know, after talking with the lady, I said, I knew I'd find something. And then she said they have this program. You know, you buy 9 books, you get the 10th one free. I gave her my name, and she goes, Ryder. I had a Ryder in here this morning. Let me guess, Dana? Yeah, young girl. She's talking about walking the Pacific Trail. Yeah, that's my daughter. And we just started talking. I said, you know, I've been collecting comics since the original Star Wars. So I've been to a lot of things. And I said, my kids, I don't want to teach them 3 things: how to read, how to swim, how to ride a bike. After that, they're on their own. And she said, well, your daughter is quite the character. She came in. She was on a rampage. She bought some stuff. She said, well, yeah, it's always a battle because, you know, I don't know if I should buy it or if my daughters have it, taken it from my collections, because I don't even remember what I have and what I don't have, which is why I've never finished Chew or Fables. But I'm going to, damn it. I'm going to. So it was just funny to talk with her. You know, my daughter works downtown St. Paul, and apparently Subtext Books is one of her favorite haunts. And I can't wait to hear from her when she finds out that Daddy's now going to be haunting that bookstore, because, you know, I'll head down there. So that was kind of my roundabout. I've been doing a little geeking and running about. And if you listen in the background, you probably heard a couple cha-chings, and there's stuff going on the eBays. I will check that out. Well, Corey, what are you freaking on? What's got you – or I'm sorry, we're on geeking. What's got you geeking?
Well, the first thing I talked about a little earlier in the show, Marvel refocusing on their collected books. I'm very excited about the fact that they said they're going to kind of do get all of the Marvel Knight stuff back into print. Not all of it was good. I'm looking at you, Punisher series by Bernie Wrightson, where he fights with angels and demons. But most of it was excellent stuff where they really stretched what Marvel was doing. And the hard thing is, when you read it, you're going to go, well, I don't see what the big deal is. These are just good comics. Well, it was a very different storytelling style than Marvel was doing at the time, because Marvel was, you know, you pick up a Marvel book and it's like, oh my God, there's so much text here. Just mounds and mounds of text. And they sort of know, we're going to do more cinematic storytelling. We're going to let the art tell more of the story. Even in the Image books that were done by artists, you had huge blocks of text. So if Marvel's able to get that stuff, you know, they got rid of the Essentials line and started the Epic books. Oh, they're going out of print. Well, that's stupid. If you're going to be doing this stuff, just keep it in print. Figure out a way to keep it in print. This will drop the day after WrestleMania. Coming up is WrestleMania weekend. And I actually put in to have the weekend off at the group home. Now, I'm not going to be able to watch all of the wrestling that will be available streaming, because you're going to get a Ring of Honor show. You're going to get Impact versus Lucha Libre. You're going to get all of these little feds that are going to do streaming shows. But I am going to just take the weekend, and it'll be a celebration of wrestling. I will get caught up on New Japan. I will watch the NXT show, because NXT always blows it, you know, they blow me out of the water. I will order a pizza and a bunch of snacks and curl up on the couch, because it's going to be cold that night, and watch WrestleMania, all, you know, 24 hours of it.
Text me occasionally, because I'll be at work.
But I'm going to be watching that, and it's really, you know...
Wait. You're not taking a run to Stillwater?
No, I don't have to.
I thought it was a tradition.
No, I only had to do it that once.
Oh, okay.
By the next year, I cleaned an apartment, so I wasn't allowed to anymore.
Was that the incident?
One of them.
Oh, there's more than one.
I'm actually looking forward to WrestleMania, especially now that I know that John Cena is probably going to be gone for a while afterward, because, man, has John Cena been terrible this year. His wrestling's still okay, but every time they give him a microphone, I just don't want to watch anymore. Speaking of Marvel refocusing on their collected books, I stopped at a bookstore, and boy, they had a whole bunch of Black Panther collected trades on the shelf. And
as well they should.
Well, and people were picking them up. So I hope that this, because the regular comic, they tried to do a bunch of spinoffs and they didn't really sell well, but I hope that with the trades you're flying off the shelf at bookstores, they go, hey, you know, maybe we should bring back the crew. Maybe we should do this. Put this stuff back in print. And then the last thing I am geeking on, I was so crazy busy over the weekend, and we just recorded this episode Wednesday, so I'm still working my way through Revival. I'm still, I did finish Motor Crush up to the most recent, you know, I read both trades. By the way, if you're, you go buy Motor Crush, it's excellent. And it's the same creative team as the Batgirl series that we really liked. But I picked up my first DC omnibus that I bought quite a while back, and that is the 60s Brave and the Bold, which reprints the Batman team-ups. And a lot of the early ones are by Neil Adams. So even though some of the stories are, well, they're by Bob Haney, so they're goofy as hell. But man, Neil Adams was really trying to impress. And even if the story is goofy, Neil Adams just drew the hell out of that stuff. And I'm sorry, no matter how old I get, no matter who works on Batman, Neil Adams on Batman's still the top of the top dog. I always, when I think Batman, I think of the Neil Adams Batman. Even though there are other artists who worked on the character that I liked a lot, Neil Adams rules the roost on that one. Believe it or not, kids, you have listened to us blather on about funny books for an hour and a half, and we had absolutely no idea what we were going to talk about.
Fantastic, huh?
Nah, we're getting good at this.
We're not the Fantastic Four, maybe the Terrible Twos.
The Dynamic Duo? I think that's taken.
Yeah.
But as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
Oh, it scared me at age 8. Quicksand, snakes, the boat scene from Willy Wonka. What scares me now? Dying alone, taxes, boat scene from Willy Wonka. Hit my music.
Done, bitches!